The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Lives, homes lost to California wildfires.
Building after building turned to rubble.
And CNN wins round one over the White House.
Grateful for my colleagues in the press who stood by us through all of this.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend out in California, where the search continues for dozens of people missing in wildfires. More from our Steve Futterman.
It has become a nightly ritual. Each evening, the sheriff of Butte County announces the latest body count in the Camp Fire.
An additional 8 human remains were recovered.
Then there are the people who no longer have homes. In the city of Paradise alone, more than 20,000 people. This man is one of them.
People are running out of money for hotels, and they can't stay there forever.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Now to correspondent Maria Villarreal.
For those that escaped the campfire, the daily litany of updated numbers fails to capture the full impact of the disaster surrounding them.
Citizens in shelters, 1,385.
But with shelters at near capacity and thousands more displaced, many have been forced to set up camp in this Walmart parking lot.
There's more evacuees, more people running out of money for hotels.
Building after building turned to rubble. Government officials say rebuilding efforts could take years.
People don't have that long to wait.
Right now, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is working with 700 open disasters. All these disasters take multiple years to get through.
I didn't expect it to move that fast.
Anna Dice says she and her father, Gordon, were ready to evacuate when suddenly he ran back inside the house.
I honked the horn and the kitchen collapsed outward. And I knew and I tried to get in the car and drive out, but the tires had melted.
Anna survived all night by wading in a shallow pond, but she fears her father is now gone.
When he ran inside and then he never came out.
Investigators are still working to figure out what caused this fire to start, but several homeowners have already filed a lawsuit against the local utility company PG&E. Reportedly, that utility company is now saying it faces billions of dollars in liability costs, and that's money they're not sure their insurance company can pay out. So inevitably, consumers might be on the hook for this. Mireya Villarreal, CBS News. Paradise, California.
Here in Washington, CNN correspondent Jim Acosta is back on the job at the White House after winning a temporary restraining order against the White House over the revocation of his access to the grounds.
Journalists need to know that in this country, their First Amendment rights, freedom of the press, are sacred. They're protected in our Constitution.
The president responded to the judge's decision.
We want total freedom of the press. It's very important to me. It's more important to me than anybody would believe. But you have to act with respect.
Another court hearing is set for after Thanksgiving. Let's go to Florida now, where recounts are underway in the state's races for the Senate and governor. Correspondent Peter King joins us in Orlando. Peter, let's start with that Senate race.
Steve, we can go on for hours about this, but Governor Rick Scott, the Republican leader right now, has declared himself the senator-elect, even though, as you and I talk, he hasn't officially been elected to anything yet. He's been calling on Bill Nelson to concede, saying that Bill Nelson's attorney is just racking up more legal fees with all the lawsuits that have been filed, and that Bill Nelson's tarnishing his legacy by prolonging the race. And, of course, here in Florida, the recounts are triggered by law. It's not a demand by any candidate. As for Bill Nelson, the incumbent Democrat, all he said is, look, we want all the legal votes counted. And Rick Scott is making a lot of noise because he's afraid of losing. That's pretty much been the Democratic argument all the way.
There's also challenges in the governor's race between Democrat Andrew Gillum and Republican Ron DeSantis, right?
There's much more clarity in the governor's race because manual recount was not triggered by the margin between Republican Ron DeSantis and Democrat Andrew Gillum. It was just not that small. So when the machine recount ended Thursday, it certainly looked like Ron DeSantis was going to be declared the winner, and they will make that official with the announcement on Tuesday. As of late in the week, though, Gillum still had not conceded, saying there are still more votes to be counted, but I don't see that happening.
Correspondent Peter King reporting from Orlando. Back to Washington, as Democrats regain control of the new Congress in January, a race is shaping up to challenge Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker.
I have overwhelming support in my caucus to be Speaker of the House.
But a group of 17 House Democrats and newly elected members have signed a letter vowing to vote against Pelosi. They say that many of the candidates ran on change, which includes the Democratic leadership in the chamber. But at least two freshman Dems, Katie Hill and Mike Levin of California, say they will support Pelosi for Speaker. So far, no official challenger has surfaced to take on Pelosi for the Speaker's chair. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
House Democrats also preparing to exercise their oversight powers of the executive branch.
On Twitter, President Trump warned of the prospect of presidential harassment by the Dems. Harassment is what Republicans have labeled possible Democratic investigations of the executive branch once the party assumes control of the House in January. In an interview with Axios, New York Democrat Nita Lowey, set to chair the powerful Appropriations Committee, checked off a laundry list of potential areas for inquiry. Yes.
The travel ban.
Yes.
The family separation policy.
Absolutely.
Hurricane relief in Puerto Rico.
Oh, it was absolutely inadequate.
Add to that dozens of other topics, including campaign-era payments to women who allege affairs with Mr. Trump, Russian involvement in the 2016 election, and the appointment of non-Senate-confirmed acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker, who Democrats already accuse of bias against the special counsel investigation. California's Adam Schiff will lead the House Intelligence Committee.
Mr. Whitaker needs to understand that he will be called to answer, and any role that he plays will be exposed to the public.
House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, likely to become the next speaker, told Face the Nation Democrats will be strategic.
We are not doing any investigation for a political purpose, but to seek the truth.
Last week, the president said Democratic investigations could backfire.
Now we can investigate. They look at us, we look at them, it goes on for 2 years. Then at the end of 2 years, nothing's done.
In that same press conference, the president said a spate of Democratic investigations would trigger a warlike White House posture. When House Republicans investigated the Obama administration, they called it oversight, not harassment. Democrats described their coming investigations the same way. Major Garrett, CBS News, the White House.
We've also learned the president is preparing answers to questions from Special Counsel Robert Mueller and his probe. Meanwhile, U.S. prosecutors are preparing to pursue a criminal case against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who's been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Coming up, why several of the most elite U.S. troops are facing charges. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
New charges in the murder of Saudi writer Jamal Khashoggi.
Saudi Arabia's top prosecutor announced charges against 11 people they claim were associated with the murder of Washington Post contributor Jamal Khashoggi. And he says the kingdom will seek the death penalty for five of the accused. According to the prosecutor, Saudi Arabia's former deputy head of intelligence ordered Khashoggi's killing. He says Khashoggi was targeted because of his work with foreign media organizations. Khashoggi was killed at the Saudi consulate in Turkey and then dismembered. It took the Saudis 2 weeks to acknowledge he had been killed, and they haven't said where his remains are.
Thursday, the Trump administration announced sanctions against 17 Saudi individuals associated with the murder, but it has been reluctant to inflict widespread punishment because of the importance of the U.S.-Saudi relationship.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Saudi Arabia is critical in countering Iran's influence in the region.
We will continue to work to maintain that important strategic relationship while holding accountable those responsible for this atrocious death.
But critics of the administration say the president's attacks against the press emboldened the Saudis. Tuesday, Senator Lindsey Graham, a strong ally of President Trump, called Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman unstable and said he and other senators are discussing more sanctions against Saudi Arabia. Nicole Killian, CBS News, The White House.
Murder charges have also been filed against some of the most elite troops in the U.S. military. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reports from the Pentagon.
The military has formally charged two Navy SEALs and two Special Forces Marines in the death of an Army staff sergeant last year in the West African nation of Mali. The four face charges of felony murder, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice. Logan Melgar, who was a Green Beret, was strangled. The Navy says it won't be releasing details of the investigation, but Melgar reportedly had told his superiors about misconduct involving the others.
Cammie McCormick reporting from the Pentagon. Now to the border, where the U.S. says its troops and Border Patrol are ready for a caravan of migrants.
Hundreds of Central American migrants pulled ahead of the caravan and made it to the U.S. border crossing in Tijuana. Arriving on 9 busloads, some celebrated by climbing the border fence to put one leg into U.S. territory. They were then taken to shelters in groups of 30 to 40. The original caravan has picked up speed by breaking into smaller groups. The U.S. government has been preparing by hardening the border with barbed wire and barriers.
Is there anything you need that you don't have?
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis joined Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen visiting troops at the crossing point in McAllen, Texas. Mattis says nearly 6,000 service members have been deployed so far and called it a moral and ethical mission.
Border security is part of national security. Our units are in a position to enable the Border Patrol's law enforcement operations.
Mattis says the troops are there for planning and support and that law enforcement will stay under the umbrella of Homeland Security.
I do not anticipate military personnel coming into direct contact with migrants.
Another large group from the caravan is now in the final stretch, approaching Tijuana. Altogether, as many as 10,000 migrants are on their way, hoping for a new life in America. Meg Oliver, CBS News, New York.
New data from the FBI show a rise in hate crimes.
2017 saw 17% more hate crimes than 2016, according to new statistics released by the FBI. 80% of victims were targeted because of their race, ethnicity, or their religion.
This uptick, one of the largest upticks in the history of hate crime reporting, is really one that gives us and other civil rights organizations grave concern.
In a statement, Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker said, "This report is a call to action, and we will heed that call. The Department of Justice's top priority is to reduce violent crime in America, and hate crimes are violent crimes." Several high-profile violent crimes have gripped the nation these past few months, from the shooting deaths of two African Americans at a Kentucky supermarket to the killing of 11 worshipers at a Pittsburgh synagogue.
For too long, meanness has prevailed.
Representative James Clyburn spoke about the decline in political rhetoric at a conference in Washington, and some say that can influence bad actors.
Hate speech leads to hate crimes.
Another concern for groups who follow these statistics is that several hundred police agencies did not report any hate crimes to the FBI.
We know that there's historic underreporting. We know that there are over 90 cities across the United States that have populations of 100,000 people or more that reported zero or nothing.
Mola Lenghi, CBS News, Washington.
Stormy Daniels attorney Michael Avenatti is being investigated for alleged domestic violence.
Is there a restraining order against you, Michael?
Lawyer Michael Avenatti appeared tight-lipped as he emerged from police custody in Los Angeles Wednesday afternoon, not taking any questions from reporters.
I'm going to make this very brief and very succinct.
In his first public statement after being arrested on suspicion of felony domestic violence, his message was clear.
I have never struck a woman. I never will strike a woman. I have been an advocate for women's rights my entire career.
The arrest stemmed from an incident involving a woman who officials say had visible injuries. Investigators didn't disclose any more information about Avenatti, who took on Mr. Trump and his former personal lawyer Michael Cohen in court on behalf of porn star Stormy Daniels.
I am a father to two beautiful, smart, daughters. I would never disrespect them by touching a woman inappropriately or striking a woman.
Avenatti, who's exploring a presidential bid for 2020, posted a $50,000 bail bond for his release. The Vermont Democratic Party has canceled appearances he was scheduled to make in the state. Tom Hansen, CBS News, New York.
Prosecutors at the Brooklyn trial of Joaquin Guzman Loera, known as El Chapo, are revealing more about the drug kingpin. A key witness identified El Chapo as the leader of the expansive drug trafficking operation that put him in the crosshairs of authorities in Mexico and the U.S. Here's CBS News legal analyst Ricky Kleeman.
He laid out a primer, a complete tutorial on how the Sinaloa drug cartel worked, and he puts El Chapo at the top.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops put off a planned vote at a meeting in Baltimore on proposals to address the priest sex abuse crisis at the request of the Vatican. Here's Conference President Cardinal Daniel DiNardo speaking to reporters about it.
We have accepted with disappointment this particular event that took place this morning. We have not lessened in any of our resolve for actions.
On Friday, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos proposed a major overhaul to the way colleges deal with sexual misconduct claims. The plan narrows requirements for schools to investigate sexual assault and harassment and offers more protections for students accused of sexual misconduct. Up next, Thanksgiving travel dangers.
So important to really send the message that we won't tolerate impairment on the road.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Concerns about rising tensions in the Gaza Strip.
Israeli airstrikes lit up the sky over Gaza in an escalation not seen here since 2014. Retaliation, the military says, for more than 460 rockets and mortars fired from Gaza into Israel.
Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad made a deliberate decision to try to maximize damage inside Israel and to kill Israeli civilians.
Gaza has been under the control of Palestinian Islamist Hamas since 2007 and stepped up attacks after an alleged botched Israeli commando mission inside Gaza left one Israeli officer and seven Palestinian fighters dead. The southern Israeli city of Ashkelon is just 8 miles from Gaza, making it an easy target. While Hamas announced a ceasefire, the Israelis aren't ready to go that far. The cabinet ordered the military to continue operations as necessary, but stopped short of calling for a new offensive. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, Ashkelon, Israel.
British Prime Minister Theresa May is weathering another Brexit storm after two cabinet officials resigned Thursday in protest of her plan to withdraw from the European Union.
It was a very tough day for British Prime Minister Theresa May. She suffered a number of key cabinet resignations over her controversial Brexit agreement with the EU. May spent 3 hours in Parliament defending the deal that's taken more than 2.5 years to achieve. When she called a news conference late in the day, there was speculation she might resign. To that, May was firm. She's going nowhere.
Am I going to see this through? Yes.
Yet members of her own Conservative Party seeking to topple her are calling for a vote of no confidence. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is pushing for a new ban on menthol cigarettes, along with new restrictions on flavored e-cigs. It comes as one e-cig manufacturer says it's doing more to keep kids from vaping.
E-cigarettes from Juul Labs, introduced in 2015, command 75% of the market, and they've become hugely popular with teens. The FDA is pressuring the company to reverse that trend. Juul announced it is temporarily suspending all retail store sales of four e-cigarette flavors that experts say attract kids: mango, cucumber, cream, and fruit, and will sell them online only. In a statement, Juul CEO Kevin Burns said, "The numbers tell us underage use of e-cigarette products is a problem. We must solve it." Vape store owners we talked to aren't pleased.
Mango is the top-selling flavor for Juul. That's going to probably bring down sales a bit.
The FDA calls teen vaping an epidemic. Preliminary government data shows in 2017, more than 3 million middle and high school students reported using e-cigarettes. Commissioner Scott Gottlieb is expected to announce a ban on sales of most flavored e-cigarettes at convenience stores and gas stations in the coming days. But Meredith Berkman with an anti-vaping group wants a ban on flavors everywhere.
We just want them to ban the flavors because the evidence shows that flavors hook kids.
Juul plans to resume retail sales of those flavors in the future, but only for stores that use age verification protocols. It's also shutting down its social media accounts. But the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids calls Juul's actions too little too late and not a substitute for comprehensive government regulation. Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
Expect another busy Thanksgiving travel rush this year.
Diego Palacios and his family are among millions of Americans planning to fly for the Thanksgiving holiday.
I think it's an exciting time to disconnect and have fun with the family.
AAA projects more than 54 million Americans will travel 50 miles or more this year. And TSA expects a record number of airline passengers.
U.S. airlines are planning for 30.6 million people to travel.
TSA officials anticipate the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and the Sunday after the holiday will be the busiest, but say they're ready to meet the demand.
We have additional staff at all our checkpoints and throughout our airports. We have additional canine teams. We have new X-ray technology, new credential authentication technology.
Step on over.
TSA is urging everyone to pack smart and enroll in trusted traveler programs. At New York's LaGuardia Airport, some flyers say it's a time saver.
Every time I travel, it makes it so much faster for me.
For those planning to hit the road, travel times in the most congested cities could be as much as four times longer than normal, with drivers in San Francisco, New York City, and Boston seeing the longest delays. It will also take more time to get to the airport.
Give yourself a little extra time. Pack a little extra patience and serenity.
TSA officials say they continue to deal with persistent security threats. They're asking travelers to report suspicious activities and Congress for more money to help keep passengers safe. Hillary Lane, CBS News, New York.
Deborah Hirschman is head of the National Safety Council, which estimates 433 people may be killed on U.S. roads this Thanksgiving. Debbie, what factors cause these crashes?
You know, the biggest factor is alcohol. About one-third of the deaths during the Thanksgiving holiday period involve alcohol-impaired drivers. And last year, Thanksgiving was the second deadliest holiday on the roads, trailing only the 4th of July.
Have you seen a decrease in U.S. road deaths generally or on Thanksgiving?
No, unfortunately, we haven't. We've seen the numbers be pretty flat over the last 2 years, and we know that there are more people on the roads. We're seeing more vehicle miles traveled. And with the economy booming, that we know that more people are back to work. And very often this means jobs for our teens, which are some of our riskiest drivers on the road. So unfortunately, it doesn't bode well for the holiday period.
What recommendations do you have for folks traveling on the roads then?
When we think about Thanksgiving, it's a celebration with family. We know oftentimes alcohol is present, and so it's really important to make sure that you designate a driver that's sober, that's not impaired. But some of the things that we can do all year round are really the simple things that we want people to think about this holiday weekend. Buckle up on every trip, in every seating position, even if you're taking a taxi or an Uber. Make sure that children are properly restrained in size-appropriate restraints. And then make sure you put those phones away. That's an easy one, but we see people distracted on the roads every day.
You've also called on states to do more. What do you want states to do?
So we really want states to take action to reduce risk. These are countermeasures that work, and we know when we look at side-by-side comparisons of states, the states that do things that work, like having sobriety checkpoints or requiring ignition interlocks for first-time or repeat offenders, things like banning open containers in the vehicle, so important.
National Safety Council President and CEO Deborah Hirschman, thank you.
Thank you. Be safe.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, how the introduction of Philly's newest mascot played out.
By that first night, the internet basically uniting behind Gritty.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Amazon's moving in to New York and Northern Virginia.
Amazon announced Tuesday it's investing $5 billion to create additional headquarters in Queens, New York, and Arlington, Virginia, bringing 25,000 new jobs to each location.
Those will be high-paying jobs, $150,000 per year average.
Amazon received more than 200 proposals for the new headquarters, but in the end, the online retail giant picked major metropolitan areas where it could attract top tech talent. Long Island City is right across the river from Manhattan, and the Arlington location is close to Reagan National Airport outside D.C.
Amazon's new investment in Virginia is going to pay dividends for the entire Commonwealth.
Amazon said economic incentives were another factor. The company will get more than $2 billion in tax breaks. Amazon has agreed to donate space here in Long Island City for a tech startup incubator and a new school. It says it'll also invest in infrastructure and new green spaces.
We're going to get more shops. We're going to get more restaurants. I'm thrilled.
I'm feeling outrage and shock over the size of this public subsidy.
But New York State Senator Michael Giannaris said his office has been flooded with calls from concerned residents.
The trains are already overcrowded. I don't know how 25,000 more people in that system is going to be handled.
Amazon also announced it'll open an operations hub in Nashville, creating 5,000 new jobs. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Long Island City, New York.
He's the mascot that keeps kids up at night, but he's earned the hearts of folks across Philly. Flyers mascot Gritty has put the NHL team in the spotlight after years of being mascotless. Adweek's Jameson Fleming got an inside look at the birth of Gritty, and he joins us on the line. Jameson, how did this team craft this idea and image of Gritty?
So they consulted Dave Raymond, who's the original Philly fanatic, and they brought him in and they started basically discussing what this should look like. And they worked with him and a few other companies to come up with a number of designs. In total, they had over 100 different characters laid out over their conference table in their office that they were periodically coming in and out of. Eventually, they decided on two different versions of Gritty. One was a very safe version, and one was the version that you see today. And they ended up going with the not-so-safe version that went viral very quickly.
You said they went with the not-so-safe version, which, of course, is this character that looks ridiculous. How much did they need to stand out in Philadelphia, in a town that really seems to love its mascots like the Philly Fanatic?
Well, the biggest key for them was they wanted to basically have something that was completely new and fresh. They said that they didn't use any existing mascot, puppet, person as an inspiration. So they pretty much left everything open, that they considered just about everything. As Sarah Schwab, who's their director of marketing, said, no idea is a bad idea when it came to Gritty.
Were they surprised at all with the reaction they got?
A little bit. They were kind of bracing. They knew the first couple of weeks could be tough. It's very difficult to introduce a mascot these days with the internet. And so they knew they were going to get some negative feedback, which they got in the first 10 to 15 minutes. What they didn't expect was by that first night, the internet basically uniting behind Gritty. They said that the very first night, Good Morning America called them and basically said we're the biggest Gritty fans on the earth, we're obsessed. And kind of right then and there, they realized, like, hey, we kind of really maybe have nailed this.
What do you think that the impact has been on team fans or for the image of the team.
And one thing that Sean Tilger, the CCO, brought up was that when you're marketing a hockey team, it's really hard to just market, one idea or one, have one person kind of stand out as the big personality because it's such a team sport. And so by creating Gritty and creating what they call, they frame him as mischievous, by creating this really, outstanding personality, they were able to kind of change the way that they market the team. And, that's something that they haven't had in the past. And they're going to be able to roll out Gritty in basically every campaign they do. They have big Christmas plans for him. He's going to be in the Thanksgiving parade in Philadelphia. So really having this one central figure has done wonders for them.
Adweek writer Jameson Fleming. Good talking with you, Jameson.
Hey, thanks.
As it sought to host the 2020 Olympics, Japan billed itself as a drug-free sports haven. Now, with the games less than 2 years away, the country has announced a new anti-doping initiative. Here's CBS News reporter Lucy Kraft in Tokyo.
Over the last year, several Japanese athletes have been caught using banned substances. The scandals have prompted Japan to set up an independent organization to create and oversee anti-doping tests for the 2020 games.
A woman accused of tampering with strawberries in Australia, in a story that made headlines around the world, had her first court appearance.
50-year-old Mayud Trin, a former employee of a fruit packing plant, was a person of interest from day one of the investigation. She's accused of inserting needles into strawberries over a workplace grievance.
It's a fairly unique investigation.
Chief Investigator John Wacker, who says it was a bizarre, time-consuming case that consumed so many investigators.
We reached out to our counterparts throughout Australia.
The 50-year-old remains behind bars. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Brisbane, Australia.
It was a celebration fit for an almost King Wednesday.
Soldiers fired traditional gun salutes in London to celebrate the 70th birthday of Prince Charles. At Westminster Abbey, bells rang in his honor.
Happy birthday, Charlie, and many more.
Royal aides released new family portraits to mark the occasion. The photos show Prince Charles with wife Camilla, sons Prince William and Harry, their wives Kate and Meghan, and his grandchildren, 6-year-old Prince George, 3-year-old Princess Charlotte, and 6-month-old Prince Louis.
I, Charles, Prince of Wales.
Prince Charles is next in line to the British throne and has been for 67 years, longer than any other royal heir.
He's going to get his turn, and he's going to do a good job because of the wisdom over the years.
Birthday celebrations for Prince Charles have been taking place for the past month, capping off with Wednesday's private tea party here at Buckingham Palace, hosted by his mom, the Queen. It's been a busy year for the royal. In May, Prince Charles walked his American daughter-in-law, Meghan Markle, down the aisle in Windsor. He became a grandfather for the third time with the arrival of Prince Louis and has another grandchild on the way next spring. If his parents are any indication, Prince Charles has many more birthdays ahead of him. His mother, Queen Elizabeth, is 92, and his father, Prince Philip, is 97. Gwen Baumgardner, CBS News, London.
Coming up, learning what it takes to be a modern Mary or Gary Poppins.
For the first time, two Mannies, male nannies, graduated.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
For lots of us, the day after Thanksgiving is the day we really wait for.
A NerdWallet survey conducted by Harris says 70% of Americans plan to go out and shop on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. But experts say people hoping to find big bargains might as well sleep in. Retail watchers say there will be some deep discounts for at least part of the day, especially for clothing. But other products are actually less expensive at other times of the year. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
A creator of American heroes is remembered.
Stan Lee was as recognizable to comic book fans as the superheroes he created, X-Men, the Hulk, and the Amazing Spider-Man.
I tried to keep them realistic, and I don't know of anybody more realistic than I am. So whatever little things worried me, I'd have Spider-Man worry about them too.
He also gave his characters real-life flaws.
The mere fact that he has superhuman power doesn't mean that he may not have acne.
Lee took a job as an assistant at a comic publisher when he was 16 that eventually grew into Marvel Comics, and Lee rose to become its president. But in 1998, Marvel forced Lee out. He spent years in lawsuits with the company and Disney to get a share of profits from movies and TV shows based on his characters. Lee went on to start his own companies. He also joined forces with his longtime rivals at DC Comics, putting his own spin on their superheroes, including Batman and Wonder Woman. He was born Stanley Lieber, but signed his comics Stan Lee to protect his reputation.
I didn't want to be known by my regular name as a comic book writer, because it was embarrassing.
He thought he'd move on to more serious writing, but he ultimately embraced his alter ego, even changing his name and making frequent cameos in movies based on his characters.
I think you never outgrow your love for things that are that colorful or much bigger than life. Along comes superhero comics. They're really, I think, fairy tales for grown-ups.
Chris Martinez, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Not your father's Monopoly game.
How did I make it big?
The goal of millennial Monopoly is not to buy up hotels, railroads, and fancy cars. It's to crisscross the board collecting experiences in your parents' basement, the thrift shop, and the farmer's market. Rich Uncle Pennybags is on the cover with a cup of coffee, earbuds, and a medal that reads participation. The tagline, forget real estate, you can't afford it anyway. The message to the generation born between 1981 and 1996, adulting is hard. Millennial Monopoly is already sold out on Walmart's website. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
You may have heard about this story, a 26-year-old New York man who was found stabbed to death after a night of clubbing in a posh Manhattan apartment party. 48 Hours correspondent Aaron Moriarty takes a closer look at the case this weekend. Aaron, remind us what happened.
Well, this is truly a cautionary tale. I think we tend to worry about young women. We don't think something like this could happen to a young man. So Joey Cominelli, 26 years of age, he lives in Stamford, Connecticut, and decided to go clubbing in New York. A lot of kids do that every weekend. He was with his friends initially, and then he ran into people he didn't know, but they seemed to be okay. They seemed like him, same age, seemed to have the same kind of background. Went to an after party at a posh apartment house on Sutton Place, and then simply disappeared. And why we decided to focus on this story was for many reasons, but one, the part that social media played in finding him, tracking him down, and the importance, in this case, the police did everything right, starting with the Stamford, Connecticut police, and the NYPD. They moved as quickly as possible because otherwise, to be honest, Steve, I would be doing this story as a mystery. We don't know what happened to Joey Cominelli, and we do. As tragic as it is, we know what happened to him because the police acted so quickly.
What about the people accused of being involved in his death? One of them is, what, the son of the jeweler to the stars?
Well, yes, but his name is James Rackover. But James Rackover turns out not to be James Rackover, actually. James Rackover is James Bowden. And it turns out that even though he was holding himself out as the son of Jeffrey Rackover, who's known as the jeweler to the stars, in fact, he's a South Florida ex-con who had just connected with Jeffrey Rackover. Jeffrey offered him a place to live, got him a job. But none of this was known to Joey Cominelli when he shows up at this nice apartment at the Grand Sutton.
A cautionary tale and another mystery from 48 Hours correspondent Aaron Moriarty. On the Weekend Roundup, you can catch 48 Hours on Saturday nights on CBS TV or stream at any time on CBS All Access. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Steve.
Now to something a little happier.
$20 made all the difference in New York City. A family from Ireland waited in line for 4 days to get tickets to the acclaimed Broadway show Hamilton. 1776. When it came time to buy, turned out they were $20 short. A nearby New York City cop, Ricardo DeCandia, stepped in to cover the difference. In a letter to the mayor's office, the family calls it the best night, thanks to the officer's generosity. Steve Kathan, CBS News, New York.
Finally this weekend, a first for a UK nanny school. Here's CBS's Terry Okita.
For more than a century, Norlin College has educated the world's most elite nannies. The students take their career choice very seriously.
At the end of the day, the only thing you need to care about and care for is the children and the family's needs.
The job isn't just child's play. The school's three-year degree includes courses on early childhood development. The practical side covers classes on cooking, baking, sewing, even how to cut kids' hair.
The degree offers something that really is quite unique and you probably won't find anywhere else in the world.
This year, for the first time, two Mannies, male nannies, graduated, including 21-year-old Liam Willett. He's proud to have made history.
All of us are very passionate about what we do, and all of us want to do it to the best of our ability.
They've become somewhat of a tourist attraction in this English town. The school says the required iconic brown uniform makes them appear professional and practically perfect, like a certain other nanny.
How'd you do that?
Do what?
Do they mind being compared to Mary Poppins?
No, not at all.
It's rumored the magical Mary Poppins was even modeled after a Norlin nanny. Celebrities, the world's wealthy, and royalty, including Prince William and Duchess Kate, use their services.
We have clients all over the world.
Graduates can earn anywhere from $35,000 to $135,000. For these nannies, it means making a good living in the most delightful way. Terry Okita, CBS News, Bath, England.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.